Okay, thank you very much for the introduction. Yeah, so I will talk about something that's, I guess, a little bit different from the rest of the talks of the session. The session's about compressed sensing and, I guess, sparse representation. So this falls more under sparse representation than compressed sensing. I'll be talking about the rank minimization problem. So a problem in which you have a low rank matrix and you make linear measurements of its entries and want to recover the matrix. So you can think of there being a sparse representation in the sense that it's a low rank matrix. So the degrees of freedom in the matrix is not the number of entries in the matrix. And I want to look at nuclear norm minimization and actually thresholds that are determining thresholds that allow us to recover the matrix perfectly. This is joint work with my graduate students, Samet and Ian. Okay, so I'll say a few words about the rank minimization problem, why it matters, and some applications of where it comes up, and the relaxation, which is the nuclear norm relaxation. And I'll focus, as I said in this talk, on trying to predict the recovery thresholds for this algorithm. I'll mention some prior work, then I'll, I guess, formally define the problem we want to look at. The main contributions of the paper are, you know, tight conditions for recovery and then obtaining new recovery thresholds, and I'll talk about them. I'll say a few words about the technical details involved in this analysis, and the reason why I'm going to only say a few words is because, and as I'll mention towards the end, after we submitted this paper, we obtained some new results which kind of trump everything that I'm going to say here today. But I have to say them anyway. But I'll tell you something about the new results. They'll be presented at ISIT in a couple of months in St. Petersburg. So if any of you are going to be there, you may hear about them there. Okay, so what is the problem we're looking at? So this is a session, I guess, on sparse representation, and so sparsity has become very popular. Compressed sensing is the, you know, perhaps most popular problem in this area. Another situation where you get sparsity is when you have a low rank matrix. Okay, so if you think of a low rank matrix, a general matrix that say N1 by N2 has N1 times N2 degrees of freedom in it. If it's low rank, it has much less, roughly the rank times the dimension of the matrix. And so if you think of the matrix in terms of its singular values, you know, the singular values are sparse if it's a low-rank matrix because most of the entries of the singular values will be zero. This problem comes up in a variety of applications. It comes up a lot in control, in particular in system identification. If you have measurements of a system and you want to, figure out a low-order system that matches that, you know, if you look at the Hankel matrix that comes out, say, from your measurements, that has to be low rank and so on. It comes up in collaborative filtering problems. You may have heard of the Netflix problem. It comes up there. It comes up in a lot of learning problems, and recently people have actually looked at, you know, traditional CS-type problems like graph clustering and have been able to show that you can put it, again, into a rank minimization problem. If you look at the adjacency matrix of a graph and you want to, say, cluster it into things that are almost clique-like, it essentially boils down to identifying low-rank components in the, if you will, adjacency matrix. So it comes up in a lot of applications. Let me formally define what it is. So we have some matrix X0, which is low-rank, and we're given some measurements of its components, and so I'm representing that by this script A. And the only thing that matters right now, excuse me, for script A is that this is a linear operator. So I'm making linear measurements, if you will, of the entries of this matrix. And, you know, the measurements are such that, you know, if this is, say, an N1 by N2 matrix, there's N1 times N2 unknowns here, but I'm making much fewer measurements. Nonetheless, I want to be able to recover the matrix because I know it's low rank. And so the problem that we'll try to solve is to minimize among all matrices that are consistent with what I measure, the lowest rank one. Again, this is a difficult problem as the compressed sensing problem is because of the fact that the rank function is non-convex. And so the approach to solve this is to relax the rank with the nuclear norm of X, the nuclear norm being the sum of the singular values of X. Okay, so this is similar to compressed sensing, where you take an L0 norm and you relax it to an L1 norm. This relaxation was first done, I think, in the PhD thesis of Mariam Fazel in 99 or 2000. It goes back to then. And, you know, just as in the L1 case, the reason why this makes sense is because the nuclear norm, in some sense, is the tightest convex relaxation for this problem. In the same sense that, you know, the L1 ball is the tightest, if you will, convex body that contains, you know, all of your sparse vectors. This is the if you look at the nuclear norm ball, it's the smallest convex body that contains all rank one matrices, if you will. Okay, now let me say a few words about the measurements. So there's two types of measurements that people have looked at in rank minimization problems. One is where you actually see entries of the matrix at random. In this case, the problem is called matrix completion. So you see certain entries of the matrix and you want to figure out what the remainder of the entries are. And, you know, so the Netflix problem certainly falls under this kind of a situation. Another type of measurement is when the measurements that you get are actually inner products of the entries of the matrix times some measurement matrix AI. So this inner product is really trace of AI times X. So you're just forming linear combinations. So each measurement is some linear combination of the entries of X. And this is natural, for example, in quantum tomography, quantum type problems, because there your X is typically, you know, the state of your system, and it's a linear combination of a few pure states, so it's low rank. And in quantum, the type of measurements you make are of this type. And so it's very natural there. It's also somewhat natural in some other applications. Okay. So for the matrix completion problem, there's been analysis that's been done. There's conditions on when you can actually recover from looking at entries of the matrix. It requires something called incoherence. And the proofs of this use dual certificates, some, I guess, convex optimization techniques. The inner product measurement, these types of measurements, are much closer to the types of measurements that we're familiar with in compressed sensing when you do, you know, random measurement matrices. And so a lot of the compressed sensing results can be translated to this particular case here, to the inner product case. In particular, things like RIP, where you have RIP conditions, say, on your measurement matrix that guarantee that you can recover things in compressed sensing, have their analogs here. There are RIP type conditions on these AIs that guarantee that nuclear norm minimization works. Likewise, similar to the null space properties that we have in compressed sensing, there are null space properties, again, and I'll talk about these a bit more, in the, I guess, in this inner product measurement case that allows nuclear norm minimization to work. And so it's, in fact, these that will be the focus of today's talk. Okay, so let me say a few words again about prior work with regards to RIP. So people, as I said, they've looked at this NNM means nuclear norm minimization. They've studied it based on RIP. In fact, the first paper that visited this is from 2007. It's by Recht, Fazel, and Perillo. And they're the first to actually look at this nuclear norm minimization using ideas from compressed sensing, and they gave some results on when you can actually recover low-rank matrices. Candace and Plan have recently improved their results, again using RIP-type results, and what they've shown is that to recover a rank R n by n matrix, you need on the order of Rn measurements. So if you think of, you know, a rank R n by n matrix, you know, there's roughly Rn degrees of freedom in it, and so this is saying you need of the same order measurements to be able to recover. And you'll see we'll improve on these results quite a bit. People have also looked at recovery using the null space property, and I'll talk more about this. In the null space case, it's easiest to do the analysis when your measurements are IID Gaussian, and I'll talk about that a bit more. And what people have observed when they've actually run algorithms like this, similar to the compressed sensing case, there's a tight phase transition. So if you're fixing the number of measurements you're making, and if the dimensions of your matrix are fixed and everything is large, you know, as you increase the rank, there's some phase transition beyond which you can never recover and below which you almost always recover. And so what we want to do is to see if we can find analytically what that phase transition is. Okay. And so a few years back with Ben Recht and Wei Yushu, we attempted to determine this phase transition, and I'll show you some of the curves later in terms of what we did then. And so what we were trying to do in this paper was to extend a lot of the results that exist in conventional compressed sensing. And so Donahue, again a few years back, for conventional compressed sensing, when you have IID Gaussian measurements, determined what these phase transitions were. And it used the Grassmann angle approach. I'll talk more about this in a moment, but the idea is that you can recover signals if the null space, if you will, of your measurement matrix lives outside certain polytopes, and to guarantee that they live outside those certain polytopes, you need to compute their Grassmann angle. And so the difficulty in the matrix problem is that the null space condition no longer gives you a polytope, but something nonlinear, and so this approach does not extend, which is why we had difficulties here, and I'll get into those details, and why things are much more complicated here. Okay, let me say something about the types of recovery that we want. So we'll introduce three notions of recovery. There's a strong notion. So if I have a collection, if I have a measurement matrix, I'll say, you know, I have strong recoverability if I can recover any low rank matrix up to a certain rank, okay? If I can recover all matrices, I'll call that strong. I'll call it sectional recoverability if it's not for all low rank matrices, but all matrices whose column and row spaces are fixed. So I'm looking at low rank matrices whose column and row spans are fixed, but other than that, it's arbitrary. So if I can recover all of those, I'll call it sectional. Weak recoverability is the recoverability of a particular low rank matrix. So if I give you a low rank matrix, if I can recover it, I'll call it weak. And so strong, if you think of it, applies to being able to recover all matrices. Weak, in some sense, means that I'm able to recover almost all matrices. And in fact, when you do simulations, what you actually encounter is the weak one, because you can never check whether you're recovering every matrix in sight. But this is the transitions that you observe in practice, and I'll show you curves toward the end of the talk, all correspond to the weak threshold. Again, these have natural counterparts in compressed sensing that people have analyzed. And so what I'll do in this paper is I'm going to give you strong recovery conditions for all three of these that improve on what's there in the literature. And based on these, we're able to actually improve on bounds on the phase transitions. Okay, so let's go into this a little bit more detail. So the measurements that we're looking at are some linear mapping. So they take an N1 by N2 matrix, that's the low rank matrix I'm trying to recover, and maps it to some M measurements. So M here represents the number of measurements, and so M is a lot less than, say, N1 times N2. I'm not seeing every entry of the matrix. I'm making fewer measurements, but I want to recover given that I know things are low rank. And again, here, the way I'm going to view these measurements is that each measurement is obtained by an inner product with an IID Gaussian matrix. Okay? And so what do we mean by strong recoverability, which I alluded to on the previous slide? The strong recovery threshold is the largest number R for the rank of the matrix, so that all, here in red, matrices with rank R can be recovered from the nuclear norm relaxation. Okay? And so clearly, if N1 and N2 goes up, you imagine the rank will go up. Actually the other way around. As N1 and N2 goes up, the rank goes down, because if I'm fixing the number of measurements, I have more degrees of freedom. And if I increase M, of course, R will go up. And so here's the theorem, and it's actually this theorem that has helped us to analyze things better than in the prior case. So this theorem is if and only if. It says any matrix of rank at most R can be recovered via nuclear norm minimization, via this, if and only if it's a null space condition. So for any matrix W that's in the null space of this operator. So script A applied to W is equal to 0. So any matrix in the null space, again, this is a linear operator. If the following property holds for all W, then, as I said, it's if and only if. And what that property is that you look at W, you compute its singular values, order them, and if the sum of the first R of them, where R is the rank you're looking for, is less than the sum of the rest, then that's the condition that we need. And we need it for every W. Again, those of you who might be familiar with the null space condition in compressed sensing, this is very much the analog of that. In compressed sensing, again, you look at the null space of your measurement matrix, and you say the condition is the absolute value of the R biggest should be less than the absolute value of the sum of the remainder entries. And so what happens in the matrix case is the absolute value gets replaced by the singular value. That's all that happens here. The difficulty is that in the compressed sensing case, those inequalities that you got essentially give you a polytope because they're all, if you will, linear in W. Here it's much more complicated because of the presence of these singular values. So these inequalities, none of them are linear. Okay, and so there's a proof for this which is in the paper, but I won't go into it. It's based on some majorization theorem. And again, it's really this condition that's allowed us to improve the earlier results. Okay? If you look at the sectional case, so the recovery for in the sectional sense is that, you know, so what you do is you pick subspaces SP and SQ of, say, dimension R, and you define projection operators onto these two subspaces, and you say something has a sectional recovery if all rank R matrices whose column spans are SP and SQ can be recovered. And then there's a condition, again, if and only if for that, which, you look at the null space of your measurement, it's W, and you require this to hold. The nuclear norm of PWQ, where P and Q are these projection matrices, should be less than that. That's a, again, it's an if and only if condition. And then finally, the weak threshold is for an arbitrary X naught, you want it to be recovered up to a rank R, again, through nuclear norm minimization. And the if and only if condition here is the following. So you take your X naught, you do the SVD, and basically you require, again, for everything in the null space that this condition holds. It's a trace condition plus a nuclear norm. So that's what we need to analyze. And the difficulty in analyzing this is that you need, for example, these conditions to hold for every element W in the null space of your measurement matrix. Now, when your measurement matrix is Gaussian, it turns out that the elements in the null space are also Gaussian distributed. And so you kind of want a condition to this hold for all Gaussians in that null space. And that's where the difficulty is. Again, just introduce some notation before I show you the main result in the curve. So again, the matrix is going to be N1 times N2. I'll take N1 less than N2. And so the aspect ratio, think of that as being the quantity alpha. I'm going to look at a rank that's, say, beta times N1, where N1 is a smaller one. So beta is less than 1, alpha is less than 1. And then again, the number of measurements I'm going to make is proportional to the size of the matrix, N1, N2, and again, the proportionality less than 1, which will be mu. And so what I want to do, for example, is I'm going to fix N1, N2, and mu, the number of measurements I'm making, and I want to see how big R can get. That will be the threshold. And to describe the threshold, I need this quantity gamma of alpha and beta, which are parameters of the problem. And it's basically defined as this quantity here. It's the expected value of the sum of the first alpha, beta, n singular values of some IID Gaussian matrices. With this normalization, it becomes a quantity independent of n. Okay, so that's what this is. And it can be computed. I didn't give the expression here, but the standard random matrix theory will allow you to. There are closed form expressions. And so these are the results. So we have bounds on the threshold. This is for the weak, sectional, and strong threshold. And they're in terms of alpha, beta, and the gamma function that I just did. Okay, so let's look at what these thresholds look like. So what I've plotted here, so here is the number of samples I'm making. So if I'm at, say, 0.5, that means I'm making the number of measurements is half the number of entries in the matrix. What I have here, so with 0.5, if I'm getting something around 0.6, this is a surrogate for the rank. So what it really means is, you know, it's the inverse of the oversampling. I have to take 0.5, multiply it by 0.6, it gives me 0.3, which means I can recover matrices up to rank 0.3n. So this plot, I should have said, is for square matrices. I'm taking n1 equal to n2. If I'm looking at 0.2, and here it's 0.5, I have to multiply this, it's 0.1. So it's saying if I observe 1/5 of the entries of the matrix, or if I make that many measurements, I can go up to ranks that are 1/10 of the entire matrix. Okay, that's this threshold that we're trying to predict. And the theorems that I just showed you do the following predictions. So that's the weak threshold. This is the sectional, this is the strong. And just to show you how it improves on the previous results, this was the previous strong threshold, and the dotted line, which matches our sectional, was the previous weak threshold. So we've improved them quite a bit, but still it's quite a bit off. But at least in this regime, it works well. And again, you know, I won't go into the technical details of this, because as I said, these results were all trumped. But basically, the difficulty in analyzing this problem is that you have quantities like this that you need to bound for all w. And so the way we did that was we essentially bounded the expected value of this quantity and then used some concentration of measure type results. So if you can bound the expected value of things like this, and there's theorems to do that, then if you can prove Lipschitzness and you use concentration of inequalities, after a lot of hard work, you'll get stuff. But as I said, after we submitted this paper, we came up with another analysis. And that analysis essentially gives us these solid curves. So that's the weak threshold. This is the weak threshold of the current paper. This is the sectional threshold. This is the current paper. This is the strong, and this is the current paper. And pretty much this is on the money now. So we're actually able to analytically predict what this threshold is. It's not this paper, it's the ISIT paper. I'll just make a little bit of a advertisement for where this result comes from. The difficulty in what we're trying to do is we're trying to extend Donahue's approach to computing compressed sensing thresholds, and those are difficult to do because it's based on Grassmann angles, which you can compute in principle for polytopes, but for these nonlinear objects are much harder to do. But you know, a student of mine, and again this is advertisement for his work, a couple years back came up with an alternative approach for compressed sensing based on an escape through mesh type idea to compute L1 optimization thresholds. And the good news is his analysis directly extends to the matrix case and allows us to basically compute the thresholds exactly. And the results are, you know, analytical. And so I'll give you a sense of these. So if you look at the strong recovery, the number of measurements has to satisfy this. So for example, in the square case, when n1 is equal to n2, this becomes 16 Rn. Okay? Now, if I have a rank R matrix, roughly there's Rn entries in it, 2 Rn to be specific. And so 16 Rn is 8 times that. So you need 8 times more measurements than the rank for the strong recovery threshold. And that's why here what you see, this point here, this is a strong curve, it's 1 over 8. For the weak recovery, this is what you get. Again, when n1 is equal to n2, this becomes 6 Rn, and so you're 3 times more than the number of degrees of freedom of a rank R matrix. And again, this point here is 1/3. So I guess I'll stop here. I mean, so I explained what these thresholds were, and we had results, but as I said, you know, we can now compute these exactly, and these are the exact curves. So I'll stop here.
Okay, thank you so much. Any questions? We have a bit of time because it's the end of it.
So first I have to admit I'm really unfamiliar with the things. But did I get you correctly? That means if I give you a matrix and if you have a measurement operator that satisfies these properties, you can really actually recover really the exact entries in the matrix before. Interesting.
That's what these rank minimization problems do. So as I said, they're analogs of the compressed sensing where you have a sparse signal and you make measurements of the entries, and these are linear combinations. You can recover the whole signal because you have sparsity. And so here, if you have a low rank matrix and you make measurements, you know, you see certain entries or linear combinations of certain entries, you can recover the entire matrix by virtue of the fact that it's low rank.
Okay. Thank you.
So the analysis is based on Gaussian.
Yes, so the analysis for Gaussian. And so even in the compressed sensing case, where you can do exact analysis for the thresholds is only in the Gaussian case. Now, what people have observed is, so for example, if you take an IID Gaussian matrix, you can compute thresholds. That's what Donahoe did. If you, say, take not IID Gaussians, but say IID Bernoullis or other types of stuff, and do L1 optimization, people observe the same phase transition at the same point. Even, you know, if you look at sparse measurement matrices, things like expander graphs and so on, they seem to exhibit the same thing. And why that is not fully understood. There's a paper in the Proceedings of the IEEE by Donahoe where he talks about these various thresholds and this universal-looking behavior. So we don't fully understand, but it appears to... So the analysis for the Gaussian is doable, but it appears that, you know, the result is more universal. And we haven't done as much investigation for the matrix rank minimization problem as the compressed sensing case, but roughly we've seen the same thing.
You proposed a new theorem, but I want to ask if it is possible to verify the conditions in these theorems by numerical methods?
No, I mean, so this is similar, again, you know, so if you're familiar with, even in the compressed sensing case, when you look at the, so there are if and only if conditions for when you can actually recover a sparse signal, and it's again in terms of the null space conditions. You have to look at every vector in the null space of your measurement matrix. And so those in principle cannot be checked. It's easy to show that it's NP-hard to do so. Here it's even more so because your null space is a matrix, which is the reason why when people want to analyze these, you go to these ensembles of measurement matrices, because there you can say that this property holds with very high probability. But the quick answer is that no. I mean, if you give me a matrix, there's no way I can check this.
Does anything special happen if the matrix to be reconstructed has particular symmetries?
Oh, yes. So if it's symmetric, yes, I didn't give the theorems here, but roughly what happens is the thresholds get cut by half. So certainly at the very end it does. So if your matrix is symmetric, basically here that 2 goes away, that 4 becomes a 2.
And if you happen to know that it was tuplets, for example, or
so the tuplets case, I don't know. But for example, if you know the matrix is non-negative definite, then it again improves. So you need fewer measurements. Tuplets, I don't know. So that's an interesting question, because if you look at the system ID problem, which is an important one, you're essentially doing it for a Hankel matrix, which is similar.
Babak, a related question is if you know it's all positive values, I mean, does that...
Oh, every entry being positive?
Yeah.
I haven't looked at that. We've analyzed the positive semi-definite case, but I haven't looked at the case where the matrix is all positive. No.
Okay. Thank you so much again.
Thank you. And that's